We save 90% of the water and land that is used within the process of production. We reduce dramatically the greenhouse gas effect because we only grow the cells that we need. We don't grow the whole cow. We don't need 2 years for growing the cow. It's very limited with time and resources. The problem is today. We have to work on it and make sure that we have the solutions for the future, which is not too far.
Welcome back to another episode of Who's Saving the Planet, the podcast where every week we interview somebody who is working to fight for a more sustainable future. Any sober conversation about the future will have to wrestle with two established truths. The population on Earth is expanding, and as we have more mouths to feed, our global food chain is straining to the point of potential collapse. Not only that, but the traditional ways in which we have cultivated beef specifically, but also agriculture in general, have led to a systemic rise in unsustainable food practices. So the question that we explore today is, what does the future of sustainable food production look like? And then also, what does it taste like? Because that's certainly important. Dr. Netta Lavone joins us to talk about the revolutionary technology her team at Aleph Farms have developed to recreate beef. Now, it's actually beef cow. It's cow cells, truly, in a laboratory environment. Aleph Farms is one of the fastest growing startups in the food tech space, having closed a $100 million Series B round this summer and earned the endorsement of one of, potentially the most famous world evangelists for addressing the core causes of climate change. I'm really excited about this conversation and honored that Dr. Lavone was willing to join us today to talk about the work she's doing at Aleph Farms. Okay, here we go. Dr. Lavone, welcome to another episode of Who's Saving the Planet. We're so thrilled to have you on board today. Thank you for joining us all the way from Israel.
Thank you for inviting me to join you. Thank you very much.
Super excited about this. We've had an opportunity to dig into food as it pertains to sustainability in a number of ways. We've talked with companies that are creating plant-based substitutes, people that are reducing the amount of distance that food needs to travel in its supply chain, vertical farming. And one of the places that we have not dug into, which I am so curious about and so interested in learning from you about, is the type of cultured, cellular-based food growth that Aleph Farms does, that creates. And so I butchered that 12 ways from Sunday. Exactly. So you can help me understand, what is it that you guys actually do?
Well, I'd be happy to do so. We are actually part of the movement that is called today cellular agriculture, which means that we create meat from cells without growing the cows. How do we do it? We isolate cells that have the capability to make muscle tissue, which is actually the steak that we are eating. But instead of within the animal, we do it outside of the animal. We take these cells and we transfer them into a broth that really replaces the feed of the cow, which means that this broth has vitamins, amino acids, minerals, proteins, whatever the cells need in order to grow. And this liquid around the cells that directly connects with them gives them the cues to grow very efficiently, at first to proliferate and create the mass of cells, and at later stages to mature and become the steak that we all like. We take these cells, and what is unique to Aleph Farms is we can build from them a tissue. We were the first company in the world to present cultivated steaks from bovine cells, from cow cells. And that was back in 2018 already. We were able to take these cells and to grow them together on a scaffold. A scaffold is made, in our case, from plant-based materials that replace the collagen, the extracellular matrix that is between our cells.
I have so many questions, but let's just start with the first one. If I understand this correctly, then there is no cow here, and yet a steak is being produced that is made of cow without the cow.
We only take the initial biopsy from the cow. We take few cells from the cow, and these cells have the capacity for unlimited growth and creation of many, many batches of meat for many years, okay? So we, of course, we take the cells. This is real meat coming from animal cells, but without the need to breed the animals, to grow the animals, to slaughter the animals, okay? Everything done from this small biopsy. All the other ingredients within the process does not involve any inputs from animals, okay? So it's only these initial cells.
So, you know, this is one of those technologies that kind of feels like it should be impossible until you actually make it possible and you see it actually happening. That degree of complexity that has evolved over generations in an isolated laboratory environment.
Yeah. So I should say that the cultivated meat ecosystem evolved from the system of developing tissues for cell therapy. That's where I'm coming from. But what is amazing here is that we don't have to grow an organ, a functional organ. Okay, we need the muscle cells with the fibers that would bring us the texture and the taste like in the meat. But it doesn't have to have the bloodstream. It doesn't have to, you know, right, to function. So we need the cells themselves that come with all the molecules, all the repertoire of molecules that bring this unique, amazing taste of meat that is very hard to mimic with other sources of alternative meats. What is important for us that we grow this subset of cells that is eaten and not the whole cow or the brain that needs a lot of energy or the legs. And by this, we have a process that is not only moral and clean and safer, it's also very much sustainable because we only grow the mass of cells that is eaten, not all the cow. It's actually 30% of what of the whole cow is used as an edible material. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's in one hand. And on the other hand, because I explained that we put the feed directly into the cells, the process is much more efficient and controlled. So we're not dependent on seasons or the quality of how the cow ate or what happened within the environment. This is very reproducible process. We do it in big tanks called cultivators, like the, you know, the breweries that you have these big tanks in breweries in beer plants. This is a factory, an industry that uses these tanks to grow the cells and then to create the meat tissue that we would like to eat and serve for our consumers.
You know, I think I told you this when we spoke before, but I used to work in a steakhouse in Manhattan, and it was a fabled old steakhouse. And, you know, people would come from all over the world to have a New York City steak. And when you would go downstairs into our dry aging room, you would see these slabs of beef that are sitting on racks, and you could see how the meat would age over time and the cells would break down a little bit and create a little bit more of a softer texture so that when you actually cooked the steak, you would release some of the fat into the steak itself. It would become very juicy, moist, all of these things. I wonder is there a way to replicate that sense of the product, the complexity within the tissues, within the meat, the different things beyond just the beef cells, but also the fatty marbling components or, you know, the bone type of thing. If you have a bone in steak, just from like a consumer standpoint, is it on parity with that or can it be on parity at some point? Or is this sort of a different type of experience? While it's still beef, it's not necessarily a corollary to what we think of when we think of like a steakhouse steak.
So we're trying to make it better. Okay. So, and you have to understand that we have the tools that it's not, you know, that we are showing off. It's because we have this toolbox that we can play with, which means that we can decide what would be the percentage of each cell type, how much muscle cells, how much mature they will be. And that means that as long as they are mature, they are more fibrous, or if we want them to be younger and softer. And what we did, actually beginning this year, we released a second product that we are developing, which is an entrecote that we made by 3D bioprinting. We can print the cells and then really tailor the design and this modeling of the different cell types, the fat inside the muscle, and make it very much accurate, especially as we want it to be. So in our vision, we say, okay, we would like to, in a way, recreate the experience of eating meat, because meat is you know, it's always when you do a feast, you have meat in the center, either right. If you know, 4th of July, or for us, Yom HaTzmaut, so you always have meat in the center of every feast, and this is something that is cultural and relates to family and tradition, but we don't have to do it the same.
So it sounds like there's definitely the two of the parts that really differentiate the way you're doing this are you can create, in theory, lots of different types of steak. So whether it's a hanger steak or a flank steak or a ribeye or a filet, based on the different ways that you are combining the cellular structure itself and with the tissues, in theory, like as this technology continues to grow, you can fabricate the different parts of a cow in today that we think of as butchery.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way. Yeah.
And without doing any kind of genetic manipulation to the cells themselves, right? It's just recreating the different component parts, repositioning them, if you will.
Yes. We in Aleph Farm decided to take the approach that we are not planning to use. We're not using any genetic modifications in our process, neither in the cells nor in the other ingredients that are combined in the process of production.
Have you ever seen the show Westworld?
No.
The beginning of this show has this amazing sequence of these technologically advanced machines creating like a wild bison, a buffalo type thing that's running. And I just keep being reminded of this when you're saying it as in like this sort of tremendous amount of intricacy that goes into create something that evolution took whatever, however many millennia to try to figure out how to balance and do well. And it's so interesting to hear that we as humans are at the precipice of being able to reconstruct that in some way without having sort of the moralistic issues of killing animals or the environmental ones of having to dedicate so much of our resources to cultivating the animals. But I got to ask this just fundamental question. How does it taste? Like, what's it like to sit down and cut into a steak that's been cultivated in a lab?
That's the most important question, because Aleph Farm is a food company.
Yeah.
Food, and this is great. This is tasty. It's amazing. I should say that everyone that tasted it gave us really positive feedbacks. And what we have here on the top of it is the fact that we really reduce the burden on the environment. We save 90% of the water and land that is used within the process of production. We reduce dramatically the greenhouse gas effect because we only grow the cells that we need. We don't grow the whole cow. We don't need 2 years for growing the cow. It is very limited with time and resources. And these main factors really makes this, or what made this technology very strong in the last few years, when people understood the need, the urgency for developing other options to, in order to promise that our children that wake you up in the middle of the night will have enough food. The problem is today. We have to work on it and make sure that we have the solutions for the future, which is not too far.
So you mentioned investors there. Now, recently, you guys made a fair amount of news because you got one of the most globally famous climate change activists in the world to say they are behind the Aleph Farms project. Would you like to say who that is?
Yes, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio, the one and only, is on your cap table. And yeah, this is, I'm sure, an incredibly capital intensive business, right? You guys have raised over $250 million before ever actually being able to sell a product. So what was the process like of going to investors and making that argument that you just did, which is like, we need to invest in this today because the crisis is not going to decelerate. It is only going to get worse. And it's worth it to invest these monies now when I know you haven't commercially sold your first product yet, and you're maybe, I would let you know how many years you are away from that, but profitability here is many years, if not decades, in the future. So how do you make that argument to people that's this sort of grand vision to bring them on board with why it's necessary to commit those funds today?
So the first thing is really, I think, is the incentive. People have to have the incentive of why are we doing this? And this is very important, because you have to remember that growing sales in culture is something that already started in the 30s. So there is a famous saying by Winston Churchill in his book that is called Thoughts and Adventures, that he published in 1931, and he had a few more later, that is saying that 50 years hence, we shall escape the absurdity of growing a whole chicken instead of just growing the wings or the breast of this chicken for food. And that's where he took it when he learned about this technology that you can grow cells outside of the body. He said, okay, let's do food. But what happened in these more than 50 years is that people focused on therapy, and which is reasonable. You know, they wanted to cure people. They said, okay, we have cells. Let's make the right cells that we need in order to have, you know, replacement for all kinds of pathologies. And because it was fairly expensive, you know, so you can sell it as a drug, as a therapy. And that's how it started. And in the last year, there were a few movements. One of them is the movement of enhancement, huge enhancement in food technologies that supports this transition. And the second one is the need to find solutions that are much more sustainable. And it brought money from private investors that always, you know, being first in the trend. Specifically, the investment that we got, which is huge, and it's actually the biggest investment in food tech in Israel. And Israel is a great hub for food technology. What is the path of development of the product? And we have a very clear path of where are we going with developing the product and launch and timetable and cost. And that's what convinced them to join us. And we're very happy that they to have this trust from everyone. And Leo is, of course, you know, is something that is because it brings many fans around him, and more people are trying to look and see what it is and learn what it is. And that's what a positive influencer is doing.
I got to wonder, when you were thinking about this journey, did you ever think that you would casually be just dropping, oh, well, what Leo thinks in reference to Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, in the last 4 years, I think things that I never imagined that I would do. He's not afraid to try everything. We're involved in spaces, you know.
Yeah.
We have the Aleph Zero program that is, we already shipped ourselves to the ISS together with a company called 3D Bioprinting, and we printed the cow cells that we grew into meat tissue. And we are now developing more experiments in a whole package of experiments to perform in, you know, outer earth territories in order to
outer
show-
earth territories. Yeah. I've never heard of space referred to. Wow, that's like when you really start moving into the suburbs, right? You're now in outer earth territories. That's
and we are planning to use the lessons, the conclusions that we gain in outer space or out of earth in order to enhance the development here.
I love that. I work with another company that frames that as celestial technology for terrestrial adaptations, which I think is a wonderful way of thinking about it. So your core constituencies here, right? If you're thinking about starting a business, you got to start knocking down your key risk factors, your unknown unknowns, and start saying, can we test for this? And can we say it's possible? How are you going to get us everyday people to be like, you know what? I'm taking the one that was grown in the lab. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah. So we I just want to emphasize that although cultivated meat, the development of it, the research and development starts in a lab, it is very similar to any other product like yogurt or like, plant-based meat. Every new technology or every new product starts in a lab. We're not in the lab. We have pilots, and that's why we don't call it lab-grown meat, because it is not correct. You know, it started in lab, that's right, but the way that we do, we have several methodologies, and we invest a lot of efforts in understanding what the consumers are looking for and how can we make them comfortable with our product. So we did many surveys in different territories of the world to see the acceptance criteria of our product. And not only us, there are a few nonprofit organizations that are very helpful. I advise to a website that gives answers about cultivated meat. So we are very open to explain what's happening, and we do this consumer acceptance. We also have Z Board, that is actually a board of Z generation young people from all over the world that we use in order to understand our future consumers. Okay, what do they like? What do they feel comfortable? What are their ideas? And it's great to work with them because they're, you know, very open. They're not like adults that already have all these filters. They just say what they feel. And even if it's not nice, that's okay, because they're very frank. And and these are the generation that we see the higher acceptance, but not only. So it gets with the Z Board, of course, because they are very much aware of what they're eating and exactly what they're eating, and very much aware of the environmental issue.
And I wonder if also some of this eventually will come down to price, in the sense that if we're going to actually put a price on carbon or put a price on how expensive it is to extract from the environment, then the traditional ways that we think about growing cattle, vis-a-vis clear cutting forests in the Amazon or pumping water into the Southwest, into these massive farms where water shouldn't be pumped, or what, and it's really expensive to the environment that doesn't show up at the grocery store. But perhaps down the road, traditionally grown meat will end up being more expensive.
I hope that part of this money will come to subsidize by government the research, or maybe the infrastructures that are required to start the cultivated meat. Because once it will get into scales, there wouldn't be any problem of price, okay? But this transition to get into scales, that is the point that I hope that governments will give the support, because then ramp up and the price would go down. And other farms, we see ourselves and we aim to be the third biggest company producing meat in the world. And I'm saying, I'm not saying which type of meat. I'm saying.
So let me ask you then, to close out, one more personal question about you and your journey. You started off in academia, where you were focused not on becoming the biggest company of anything, but of the scientific research behind what it takes to do what you do now. And then you made a switch. And I've had the luxury of speaking to a lot of people that have gone through that process of saying, I know quite a lot about something specific, but within the halls of academia, I'm not able to grow that knowledge into something that can really affect as many people as possible. But that transition can be scary, or can be difficult, or can be sort of, you're going from something that is relatively secure to something, I mean, a startup, goodness knows, is the least secure place that you can go. What influenced you to make that decision? And what advice would you give somebody else who's right now thinking about, well, maybe I could take what I know in the context that I'm working on it and apply that to something that has this infinite growth potential?
It's a great question. I should say that I went, on with my heart and my feeling that this is something that has a very big impact. And I believe that we should focus on prevention and not treatment. So when we grow meat in a healthier, nutritional manner, and also reduce the issues that relate to environmental contamination and that brings later, health issues, we can reduce the need for the therapies that they use to develop. So this is it's best to cut the chain at the beginning. But I have to say that I'm lucky, because my partner, my husband, is very much supportive. And he said, go ahead, try it. I know that there is a risk here. I've been working in a company that was doing already clinical trials with FDA, very much secure. But I felt that my heart is going there and I want to try, and it's very challenging. and I will learn a lot. And that's what happened. You know, I learned so many things in this journey because I learned about food technologies. I learned about economies of scale. I learned about not only the cells that I was very much focused on and how they grow and how they create the tissue and so on, but also about all the other stuff around it that relates to investors, that relates to, you know, marketing and all the people around me. You know, Alepharm is now almost more than 50 people. So we have experts in many fields. And I'm glad I did it. I'm very glad that I did it. Some people said that I'm crazy, but I didn't listen to them.
Crazy people are the ones that change the world, you know, for better and worse. And I think in this case, for a whole lot better. Well, Neda, thank you so much for coming on and lending us your time to help explain what is going to be so pervasive. You know, this is something that may feel like on the fringes today, but in 5, 10, 15 years, cultivated meat, I think, will probably be as ubiquitous as plant-based meats are now. And so we'll see that these three categories are side by side in the grocery, right? Whether it's traditional, plant-based, or cultivated.
You are right. We wouldn't have to explain it anymore. You know, for our children, it will be natural. They will see it like the smartphone that they take us.
We'll all be out of a job at that point, but it's okay because no one pays me to do this anyway. So you know what? We'll be right back where we started.
Yeah. Thank you very much for me. It was a pleasure. And let me know if you come to Israel. I'd be happy to host
you. Oh, I would love to. That would be amazing. And thank you very much. Please keep in touch in terms of any other developments that we have. We always love to support our Who's Saving the Planet family as they get good news. So we look forward to talking to you again. And thank you so much, Neda. Really appreciate it.